For October the 19th, 2018, we talk about the Rockstar Labor Controversy, 1979 Revolution Black Friday, and we ask you about your favorite open world games. Welcome to Level 261. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Ben, welcome back.
Hey. I'm alive and well.
I'm happy to hear it.
Both things are important.
Yes.
Both things did not feel true last week.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to keep it out on the... Go ahead.
No, yeah. It was the first week that I had, like, Texas allergies, which I guess people have been telling me about for the past couple of years. chest congestion and feeling like you're drowning when you swallow. Like, that's not fun. Yeah.
Go ahead, y'all.
Did you have an allergy panel or anything to figure out what of the very many plants that would set you off did set you off? I'm just curious how many. Oh, you should probably, well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, there's probably at least five that are setting them off, especially in Austin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So basically you got waterboarded by your own immune system.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary if you don't expect it.
Yeah. And I was saying this before the show, I had like never had chest congestion before or anything like that. And so I had no idea what was going on. So yeah, I thought it could have been much worse, but I was relieved to know it was just allergies.
Well, see, like if you don't nip it in the bud when you first have it, it will turn into a chest congestion type of thing. That's why, like I've mentioned it before about how, like, once it gets cold, I usually get sick. It's because of allergies, mm-hmm. and I've always had them here in Texas, but I did not have them when I lived in Miami. So
yeah,
I didn't have that problem in Miami. It was only here. So there's like any number of different things that are about this time of year that caused me to have various issues. And I actually was sick with allergies. It was only for one day because I took some hardcore medicine and like knocked it out. But I like went to bed and all I did was sleep for like a day, you know.
Yeah.
But then when I was done with that, then I was fine, and then it didn't ever progress to anything that I had to go in for. But yeah, so yeah, I understand completely, because you know I've had some pretty severe reactions to Texas allergies myself.
Yeah, I feel like this doesn't make a strong case for Texas.
Well, I wasn't ever trying to tell you that you needed to move here, other than the fact that you just need to go have adventures with me, and it's not convenient if you live up there.
I'm convinced that it is like all this. Oh, I just dropped a pair of pliers. I'm convinced that all of this talk of allergies is making my allergies worse. Jolly, yeah, you at least can attest that I had a bunch of loud sneezes. My nose has been running. Yeah.
You're allergic to allergies?
I'm allergic to conversation about allergies.
Well, that's only because you had that issue with the yard the other day, and you were out there in it, and that caused it to make it worse.
Maybe, yeah. So what Jala's alluding to, went and cut my lawn for the first time since I bought this house. It really didn't mess with my allergies that much, just because I'm not really that allergic to grass. However, what did bother me was the fact that I was using a push mower that was way too short for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Kind of crouching over and pushing this, you know, relatively heavy thing and, you know, wrenching it around to make turns and stuff like that, really fucked up my back. And then I went to my niece's volleyball tournament. Her team went undefeated the entire season, and they won the tournament. But it was like 8 or 9 hours of sitting on shitty middle school bleachers, which exacerbated the back problem even more than it already was. So like I was laid up. I felt like I felt dumb. Like they're not dumb. I felt like weak and infirm, even though like. Really, as long as I can pinpoint the cause of the problem, then my body isn't failing. If I felt like this for no reason, then it would be a thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, crazy how much you need your back to be functioning.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's kind of like with my scoliosis.
Yeah, it's not like we're called vertebrates or something.
Well, with my scoliosis and spinal stenosis, I have a lot of back problems. But the thing is that you would not be able to tell because I don't actually have back problems, even though I have back problems, because I do so many different things. Both to strengthen it and then also to ameliorate the issue by, you know, like getting massage work on the really, really hard muscles that, you know, tense up and trigger the spinal stenosis and things like that, to the point that because I'm so proactive about doing that, my back is actually a lot stronger than a lot of other people's in general, let alone with, you know, these kinds of conditions. So I went to the chiropractor and he's like, you know, he just hopped on a table and he's like, you know, he's flipping through my chart. You came in here 7 years ago with this, you know, these symptoms. And then he ticked off a list and then he's like, and your current symptoms are like this, you know, and you only come in here maybe once a year now. And, you know, just to get adjusted to kind of like get a checkup, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're not any worse. And that is real weird. That's atypical. And it's because you do so many different things, you know, both things like yoga and belly dance, which help with mobility because otherwise it would freeze up, as well as, you know, the strength work and the massage and the whatever else to just kind of like maintain. So, you know, like it's a crappy thing when your back goes out. My dad has, he's disabled because of a back issue from a car accident. So, you know, like we are a house of people with various issues with the back. So that's why I was kind of acting kind of like Mama Duck to Cole on his stream and shaking my finger at him and half trainer, half Mama Duck, telling him to be careful about this and that, and you need to do some strength training.
You know? Oh, absolutely. I don't doubt that I would benefit from that. I've been very fortunate because I just don't really have that many back problems. It's usually like just like once or maybe twice a year that is like inflamed by a particular set of circumstances, you know. As long as I can pin it to an actual thing, I feel okay.
Yeah. Oh, but I did want to say that on the note of those kinds of things, though, this this week's blog is all about strengthening and stretching for computer users. So you would benefit from taking a look at that, Cole, as would everybody else listening to this, because I know you are all on computers. So yeah.
I'm standing up right now.
Yeah. But like, seriously, some of those stretches that I put in there are stretches that are not typically, like, there's tons of articles about this kind of stuff out there, but I actually had one of my physical therapist friends take a look at it as well, and, you know, got some feedback on that to see if I could make it a pretty complete list. And I will be doing a workout for strengthening stuff later on. I just kind of fizzled out when I got to the strength part. I'm like, okay, well, I'll do more about that later.
Yeah. So that's my boring stuff. I mowed my lawn and I feel like
an immense, almost died.
I felt like I wanted to die. Not really, but it was pretty miserable.
I got
a washer and dryer, which is a weird thing to feel proud of, but I've got a washer and dryer now.
See, you don't realize how much of a thing that is until like the entire time I was in San Francisco, I was hand washing.
Oh Jesus!
Like once you don't have it, you realize how much of an accomplishment that is.
Well, you know, like whenever I rented, when I was in a 4-unit building, we had a washer and a dryer. They were both coin op, and it was just one of each. So like you had to do this very delicate dance. Not a dance with your delicates that happens inside the machine itself. It's a setting. No, you had to do a very delicate dance to make sure that you weren't like running into somebody else's appointed time, to do their thing. No. So yeah, that's my boring old man stuff.
I like how the video game podcast is turning into a health podcast now.
That's only because I do the fitness teaching thing. So sorry.
How about you, Jala? What's been going on?
I went to Camp Gladiator Boobash, which is, as you might imagine, a Halloween-themed special event that we did. And I was not one of the trainers leading it, so I just got to participate. And it's kind of great because they're like, wear the orange Camp Gladiator shirt, you know, that they had made special for this event, or you can wear a costume. And so I was like,
you went with Buet.
No. So then I was like, well, first off, I don't wear white. Second off, like, I have dresses, sure. anyway, most of my training gear already looks like some kind of, you know, costume. So I was wearing one that looks like a suit of armor. So, you know, so I just rolled up there my usual. So,
yeah.
So that was a thing. And it was a lot of fun. It was funny because they were like, pointing to this guy named Ed, who's one of the other trainers. And they were like, Ed's going to lead the way on the starting lap around everything. And so I was like, okay, Ed, lead us. And he's like, oh God, you know, cause he knew what was going to happen and I beat him. So, you know, like, not that I'm super fast or anything, but, you know, still I did the thing and yeah, it was fun. And it, like, they had candy, bags of candy and like cake pops and stuff like that. So like you could totally undo all that great, you know, calorie burning that you just did, you know?
Yeah. Seems like a trick.
Yeah, it is. It's a trick, not a treat. So,
ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. So that's my story. That's what I did. Cool. It was fun. I got other such things coming up.
Nice. So. David, how about you?
Not too much. Continuing on with the martial arts stuff. Learned that blocking a stick with your forearm is generally not the best strategy.
So you have a nasty Tommy Boy-esque bruise along your entire forearm?
Yep.
Okay.
So at the very least, you know, a problem I probably don't have is we've had issues in the past with people giving some of the women in the martial arts club like information on domestic abuse hotlines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just from, you know, having the bruises, whatever, all up and down their forearms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at least I'm unlikely to you know, have to deal with that thing.
Yeah. Huh. Well, you know, bruises fade. They take a long time, but they do.
Yep. So, yeah. But no, still fun. I got some good hits in. So, always good.
Nice.
Yay.
Yeah. I think is it Ben. All we talked about was your allergies. You have anything cool happen this past week or 2 weeks?
I'm preparing to come to Cincinnati this weekend for a wedding.
Oh dang!
And I think I'm going to do a LAN party with some people in town. So I'm excited about that. But
I'd be down there if I wasn't going to be in Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be in Portland if I wasn't going to be in Cincinnati. I don't
know. Yeah. 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 You know, weddings.
Are you guys going to do Voice Box again this year?
Yep. Box is already already reserved.
Nice.
Yeah. It'll be fun. I just I was telling Jala before we started recording, I am looking forward to like getting there and starting because it is the anticipation and the getting ready and double and triple checking stuff that wigs me out and stresses me out. And also, just all that. So once I'm there, it'll be good.
Do you have any predictions for how many characters you're going to unlock in Smash Brothers?
I don't know. And I don't know how many trophies we're going to get either. I like the little giveaway that we got for that, though. We have kind of a standard number of kind of pins that have the final destination map on it. And it says watch out for fireballs under it, but it's like the platform, you know, in space, and there's like a little waffle sun in the back. And then we have little stickers to put on the stage of like you know, the watch out for fireballs, you know, waffle character, you know, the monster my podcast beholder, just like little tiny dudes to stick on. Yay. There as people unlock trophies. So
that sounds sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to do that. It'll be a pain. I know we'll have a lot left over, but you know, we like doing something a little special. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yay. It seems like banter has been achieved. Man, I might actually need to go take a sinus pill. We'll see. We'll see. The
we triggered you with the talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But regardless, we have the regular kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us.
You sound like you're about to die. Go take your pill, dude.
No, I'm fine. I'll be fine until after this. Let's see here. So we have some stories that escalate to our multiplayer here. So I'll do mine because it is a classic Cole Ross, a thing is going to happen story. Have any of you played the game Onimusha Warlords?
Nope.
No.
No.
No. Has anybody here seen Tron? It's a Simpsons joke. Yeah. No.
It's all the remake.
A sequel. The sequel, Tron Evolution. Onimusha is a game made by Capcom. It originally started out as a Resident Evil game, I believe. And they were working on it. This is the one that turned into Devil May Cry.
Yes, I know that part of the story, actually.
Yeah, because there was a glitch where the main character here, he would slash an enemy and it would, like, stay juggling in the air. And they thought, that'd be enough to build a game around. And they were pretty much right. I had no idea. This was a really pleasant surprise. But Capcom isn't just doing their Resident Evil 2 remaster here at the beginning of 2019. On January 15th of 2019, they are doing an HD remake, or re-release, rather, of Onimusha, which is a game that nobody on here has played, but I have some affection for. It was like a super early PS2 game. It was the game that I bought with my PlayStation 2 back in like the summer of 2001.
Yay!
But yeah, it's like a survival horror. You're playing as a samurai, fighting off a bunch of demons and shit. It's neat.
I feel like that would make it hard to do like survival horror when you are, you know, a master of martial skill.
I mean, it's a little bit more actiony than a lot of survival horror stuff is. And admittedly, as the series went on, they kind of stripped away the survival horror aspect of it and made it more of a character action game. But the first one, I think, definitely qualifies.
So does that mean you're going to play it on Hex Crank?
I would like to. I was thinking of doing it anyway. I wanted to get just kind of a regular copy of it because I traded mine in back when I still traded in games. However, this past spring when we went to the Midwest Gaming Classic, I bought a bunch of strategy guides, and one of them was Onimusha, and I was flipping through it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Just like reading the strategy guide because I like doing that. When this comes out, I'll probably do that on Hex Crank.
Woo.
Yeah, and January is right around the corner, too. Yeah, let's see. Sorry, I just looked at the outfit. I've seen that outfit that you wore there before, the suit of armor one.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. So, Ben, what's going on over at Rockstar?
Yeah,
that I should be really angry about.
There's two kind of stories. The first one I didn't link, but one that came out I think today is they announced that the single player campaign for Red Dead Redemption 2 is 65 hours long, which seems cool. It's a good amount of game right there, possibly too much of a game. But then the other story that came out recently is they had an interview with one of the, I think, senior developers of the game, who was more or less bragging about them having 100-hour work weeks during the crunch time. And I think there was immediate blowback because of that, saying like, yeah, you shouldn't really brag about that. That's terrible.
Yeah.
And then he immediately like released a statement kind of like going back on that and being like, oh, you know, everybody works differently there. We don't make anyone work there longer than, you know, they have to. They're there by choice, you know.
Yeah, by choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so that's kind of their minor PR misfunction today, but yeah.
We can't make it a rule that you have to be in your desk before the boss gets here, but they're gonna notice, you know. Yeah,
You don't have to sleep here, but if you leave, you can leave permanently.
You don't have to sleep here, but it helps. Also, you don't have to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, just that fucking machismo of like, oh, I'm a real developer. I work, you know, we get into crunch and it's going to, you know, 100-hour weeks. You know, we would do in here tested by fire. No, nobody should let that happen. There should be management walking around looking to see like when people clocked in and saying, go home now at 40 hours. Yeah. You know, even like leadership here, leadership absolutely shouldn't be glorifying a culture where you stay like where you work like that.
Yeah. Especially because, like, after a certain point, you are not writing good code if you've been working that long.
Yeah.
So
I remember back, I got like one of the like biggest arguments I've ever been in back in college. We were doing like a senior project or some kind of video editing project. And it was like 9 o'clock at night. Okay. We had the edit lab. And there was this one person who was like, all right, those other people, they were there, you know, they were here until like 6 o'clock this morning. So what we're going to do is we're going to be here till six as well. I'm like, you know what? No, tell you what, I'm going to go. I'll be back here at six. I'm going to go get some shut eye. And they had the gall to tell me that I was lazy because I was going to go home and go to sleep and wake up and come back in at six and edit before class.
Did you say that you were the superb senior and that they should listen to you?
With the superb senior, what?
What was the superlative you got? Like star senior or
I forget. I don't know.
All right.
for as much as it matters, like literally, it was just like, no, like I know I'm going to do bullshit work. You're probably going to do bullshit work, so I'll come in at six and I'll, you know, be on my game and I'll fix the mistakes that you make by being here. Like don't try and lord guilt over all of us because you have no sense of moderation. You know, I know that's a shitty little anecdote and that is nowhere near at the scale of this, but like, this is a fucking toxic attitude that has taken root the entire time. And especially leadership at the studio should know better than to brag about this, you know, than to brag about a toxic expectation that they say they're not setting, but they absolutely are.
Mm.
Because everybody knows you're expected to work as much as your boss or more. Blah. Sorry, I didn't mean to like go on a tear.
Yes, you did.
I didn't mean to go on that much of a tear. So, I also didn't mean to just suck all the air out of the room. So, David, Ben, as two people who work in development kind of stuff, am I just an idealistic crank or like, you know,
I think it depends on the industry. Like, it's standard for video game industry, so it's like a lot harder. And like other industries, you can be like, no, I'm going home. Sorry. Like, you know, I only am supposed to work 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And other industries, you can get away with it because that's the law is standard, I guess. So
pretty much. I know I tend to work 40-ish hours a week. I mean, I tend to work, you know, some on the weekends, usually just you know, playing around with some interesting you know, problem or part of the code, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But unless you're, you know, in a startup, and I feel like that's the thing, is most of these people don't even, you know, if the game is wildly successful, you know, they're probably still not getting paid as much as like your average developer.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, we talked about it with Telltale, you take a pay hit because everybody wants, you know, it's a supply and demand thing, you know.
Right. Whereas,
you'll work cheap because this is a dream job.
Right. Whereas, like, when I was at a startup, I worked more than 40 hours a week, but I also had equity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, at Rockstar, people, you know, like, and with a lot of these things, there's a core team that sticks around, but a lot of people who are, you know, filling out this project, they get laid off at the end of the project because that's just the ebb and flow of the industry, you know? Blah. So I didn't mean to get angry. This leads into your story, Jala, which I will throw over to you, about open world games possibly getting too big. What's going on with this Digital Trends article?
Oh, Well, so this Digital Trends article is just kind of like an opinion piece about open world games in general, saying that they've gotten too big, as you already said. Mm-hmm. Basically, the point is that they're trying to make that the scale of the game is now has now become a selling point rather than the activities to be completed within it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has made a cycle of bigger is better, mentality, to the point that these games don't feel like any more of a living world than the games that are on rails, because there's just like, they build the world, they get all obsessed with building a world, but then they don't worry so much about that content that's in that world for, the most part.
Yeah.
It talks about Grand Theft Auto 3, which wasn't the first open world game, but it helped change design philosophy to encourage experimentation and made travel a key component of the storytelling. And it compares Ghost Recon Future Soldier, which was mostly a linear mission-based game that had some player agency, with Ghost Recon Wildlands, which opened up all of Bolivia that you can explore. So there's that South American representation that we were talking about last episode.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, it's reputedly pretty boring. You go from mission to mission, but it requires several minutes of driving with only the canned banter going on. And the missions themselves are, repeats of each other that are just kind of recycled.
Yeah.
About Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey, it says that while these games feature meticulous design, they sacrifice pacing because you have to prepare your levels, abilities, and equipment before you enter new zones, and the end game is so far out there that you basically don't feel a sense of urgency on them. And the article is suggesting that devs need to consider why rather than what. Why does a game have to be that big, and does it improve the moment-to-moment experience? Now, that second part I don't think is very much questioned, No Man's Sky was brought up as an obvious culprit of, making it bigger, but then not having a lot, initially to do, by comparison, a lot of it was rote. And it cited Red Dead Redemption 2's recent trailers, saying that the game is an open world because of the activities it holds. The activities aren't included because it's an open world. And so they are looking forward to that and hoping that that game is a good instance of an open world game.
Yeah.
So it's just an opinion piece, but it was a good question. And it was something that I thought would be interesting to discuss on the show. So I brought it up.
Yeah. No. I really chafe when a game is obviously trying to make itself a lifestyle.
Yeah.
We're going to make a world for you to live in. We need to sell on scale, because even though this game desperately needs to sell for more than $60, because games have been underpriced for a very long time, we need to feel like you can justify paying us full price, and also the season pass, which gets things up closer to what this actually should cost. I think it's just trying to, sell past the close. And I've enjoyed an open world game or two in my time. I've got a shrink wrapped copy of Spider-Man waiting for me when I get back from Portland. It's a real problem, and I would actually like levy a lot of criticism at Ubisoft, for being a little bit of a genesis of this. Even though their maps are denser with points of interest and things to do, it is, very much of the, kind of iterative cookie cutter kind of feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of this, though, is to play devil's advocate. I feel like the problem is that the non-open world games, especially recently, just don't give you value for your money. A game that's what, 10-15 hours long for $60 is kind of hard to justify.
It's difficult for me to say what should be, what $60 is worth, to somebody else. I can only speak about it for me.
So what games, David, are you talking about that you are thinking about in particular that are like that?
I I tend not to buy those games, but you know, it seems like whenever now I, you know, check the time to beat on a single player game, that's about what, you know, I guess I should say, like, you know, your more traditional story based game, it seems like that's what it averages.
But I mean, it's always been the case that a full price game, you know, like it is not uncommon to see a 10 hour play time, right? For a big, you know, Hollywood style AAA game, right? Like that doesn't seem like something that is especially new to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know personally. I can't say. I just know, you know, I budget even now, especially back before, you know, I was, you know, more established and a good job, you know, about $160 game a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually look for, you know, more than 10 hours of recreation in a month.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, too, that part of your perspective is the fact that, you know, say, for example, I was going to mention MMOs and the fact that I have played several MMOs, but, you know, really, they are, you know, essentially a big open world game with a bunch of stuff that is really repetitive in them, you know, that you have to grind through and everything. And so that's the aspect about them. Like, I like the exploration part. I do not like, you know, how standardized all of the things that you are doing in that world become over time. So, I mean, like, you know, an MMO is also equivalent to that open world problem, in my opinion. However, you, David, like to play an MMO and grind the shit out of things. So, I mean, like, you're looking for time, and like, that is something that you enjoy doing. I do not enjoy doing that. So, like, that is the absolute opposite in my case. So it's, you know, it's definitely a perspective thing, you know, as to where you find value in a game in general, and whether or not this is a problem for you, or if it's just, you know, like something that you notice about, you know, the game that, oh, well, it's at this really big place, but there's all these things that I do, and a lot of them are the same, but I grind anyway, so it's fine. Like, you don't, you know, it may or may not bother you, as I suppose, what I'm trying to get at there, you know?
Yeah.
It is an interesting question of, like, what is a quality open world game? Because, like, Ubisoft has, like, a bunch of, like, similar missions kind of taped into different places, and then, like, I don't know, that's their open world, whereas, like, there's something different between that and, like, Rockstar games, where it's, like, the kind of side missions or whatever are very, like, flavorful and, like, fun to do and kind of, like, not, I guess, like, cookie-cuttered, I guess, that Ubisoft feels like. But I don't know. I guess we'll line somewhere between those two.
What would be, like, the time to play on, say, like, a Zelda game or something like that?
Breath of the Wild is an outlier.
Like, that's a series that, you know, at least, you know, back when I played them, I definitely got my gameplay out of, but that were also, you know, pretty solidly, you know, story-based, you know, fairly linear.
I want to say, like, 15 to 20 hours for, like, a regular... Yeah, like a main story on Ocarina of Time is like 27 hours.
Maybe
like
I was just really bad at them, because I definitely spent dramatically more than that.
Yeah. And so I feel like, you know, like a large part of the Gold Rush appeal on this, you know, because I don't know, I fucking love The Witcher 3. I think that that is one of the most stellar games available, you know, even aside from just being an open world game, right? Yeah, I don't know. I wonder how much of the Gold Rush is spurred on by a shallow or incomplete understanding of, like, why a game like Skyrim has stayed at the top of the charts for 7 years, right?
See, I would actually say, though, Skyrim's kind of the poster child for this, in that it was a game that entirely sold on size over substance.
I mean, Oblivion as well.
Yeah, I can't say I didn't play Oblivion.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know.
Well, see, like, what's funny is I really, really loved Morrowind, but I was not so much a fan of Oblivion or Skyrim after a certain point. Like, when I first got into it, yes, it felt new and shiny, But at a certain point, it just lost its glamour because a lot of those areas look very much the same mm-hmm. when you go there. And so it's not just that the missions are the same, but also the areas look really, really much the same. So, like, that's kind of, you know, bleeding into the multiplayer with that right there. So yeah. I'll just stop talking about that. But, you know, there's definitely some changes that have gone on with how even that was approached. Yeah. So.
I don't know. It seems untenable to me, right? Like, regardless of, you know, whether or not Red Dead Redemption 2 specifically as like the poster child for being gigantic, right? Regardless of whether or not that is actually considered to be helped by its massiveness and by the, you know, just size and scope of the world and things that are available, you know, to you when you play it, like, it just doesn't seem like you can have more of that, right? It doesn't seem like you can tenably say, okay, we're like, the next one is going to be even bigger, it's going to be even denser, it's going to have even more stuff in it. Like, that seems like a fool's errand to try and chase that.
Yeah
that scale doesn't scale.
Yeah.
I don't know. We should probably go ahead.
I guess you could call that like Moore's Law with a single O, maybe.
But even Moore's Law is breaking down. It's broken down a while ago, too.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. We should probably go into the multiplayer because that is related to this. So,
multiplayer.
Ben, I will never forgive you for giving me your allergies.
I'm so sorry. I will never talk about them again.
And I was thinking about this as I walked into the other room to get my medicine. Your name is the hardest possible name to say when you're all stuffed up. Ben Burkle. So I can't even curse you properly. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I asked, what is your favorite open world game? And if you don't like them, why not?
Yeah. So follows quite nicely. I'll get us started here with Devin, who says, Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. It gave me a sense of wonder and exploration that I didn't get in Skyrim. It will always hold dear in my heart. I wonder if Elder Scrolls games are like the Tony Hawk games, in that the best one is obviously always obviously it is the first one that you played, and everything else yeah. after it added a bunch of superfluous bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's just like they the first game that I played that was Elder Scrolls was Morrowind, but the thing about it is that it was markedly different in the environments that you had and everything versus the other ones. Like, Oblivion is generic fantasy setting, and then Skyrim is here's some Norsemen, you know, like I had just
basically
played.
Still generic fantasy
setting. Yeah, it's still generic fantasy setting, but like I had just come off of like some Guild Wars stuff with the Norse, the Norn in that game. And so I was just like, I am sick of these damn Vikings. I am part Viking and I am upset. I want something else. So like it was just like boring settings, whereas Morrowind is just a weird place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so. I still think it is a crime that they haven't made what's the kidgy homeland, like Elsewhere or something.
Yeah, no, they should absolutely do
they
Elsewhere.
Should do one. Yeah.
The crazy desert.
But, it's just a bartering game.
Right.
It's just a bunch of pictures of cats. Wait a minute. Right. I open this box.
The internet goes wild.
I open this box and there's just a QR code in here that takes me to the Bodega Cats Twitter. Huh.
You open up this box and then a cat jumps into it because it fits.
Yes.
And it sits.
Of course. And it's
but
therefore.
You will never know whether it's alive or dead.
If you shut the box, yeah.
with some poison and radiation in it, you psychopath.
That's right. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
David. You'll know it's be dead if you shut the box about it.
Basically, yeah. Skooma. Just put it in there with Skooma and you're fine.
He'll be fine. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I love GTA San Andreas. It felt like a city and state for the first time. People acted differently depending on where you were and what you did. It felt real in a way that nothing else did at that time.
Yeah, the GTA games were good about that kind of a thing, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like, I feel like the games since San Andreas, this is partially, you know, looking from the outside in, seem like they're objectively better games, but they don't seem like they have the soul, quote unquote, that like San Andreas does. Does that make sense?
I would say 5 was a good recovery from 4, but yeah, definitely there was a step down in 4, I think, or they went for realism, which is a good idea maybe, but it just isn't as fun to play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also the driving was bullshit in 4.
Oh, see, I felt like the driving was the best part. The, like, realistic driving was...
Oh, I hated it so much.
that's realistic getting in a taxi cab. You try to drive a car that is a sports car like a sports car.
I suppose. But when you're making your game, it should be fun.
We did have all of the fight mo capture from Boss Rutan, which was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, like Krav Maga, yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, it's really hard for me to pick between the Elder Scrolls and Fallout series. Both of them are amazing for different reasons, but offer a truly immersive experience, tons of gameplay, and a personal freedom to do what you want. I'd give... a slight nod to Elder Scrolls due to the personal gaming taste. Also, I'm glad to see these are older games. I do not have 100 hours right now to sink into an open world game as much as I love them.
He edited this a few times. The most recent one actually makes it more specific. Between Skyrim and Fallout New Vegas is he got more specific there. He said he's got to give a slight nod to Skyrim over New Vegas. Which I take great exception to. Oh, it's fine. There's no wrong. Yeah. Man, New Vegas is hard to beat. I understand people liking Skyrim quite a bit. It also is very strange to hear people talk about Skyrim as an old game. Weirdly enough, I don't get weirded out that New Vegas is considered an old game because it was in 2010, but a game that came out in 2011, Skyrim, that is an old game. What are you talking about?
Maybe it's because they just keep releasing it every year that it still feels fresh.
It is possible. Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says GTA Vice City.
Yeah. I mean,
sweet.
It's hard to take a shot at that. Like that soundtrack and also the ability to buy businesses. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah. It is totally oats.
I had one of my friends who streams tried to beat the game in 24 hours and beat it in like, I think 26 or so.
Oh yeah. But
it was impressive to see like all of the game in that amount of time.
That would go nuts. It's hard enough to, I don't even stay up for 24 hours for Duckstream. I always get people to come in and tap out for me, but let's see. Jonathan says No Man's Sky is open world, if I'm not mistaken. Lol. I've enjoyed many of these types of games. I love exploring. Yeah. No Man's Sky is open worlds. Yep. I still need to go back and see how they change that. I know you're laughing because his autocorrect made it No Mandy Sky. And I love that. No person named Mandy. Mandy Patinkin, get back on the ground.
I'm just imagining it as like the stereotypical like clubhouse, like Mandy not allowed.
Yeah. It's no Mandy's, you know, we were allowed to have one. David, what does Sam say?
Sim says, I can't remember where we are in the hype / cycle about this game, but I still really love the open world elements of Zelda Breath of the Wild. The leveling mechanic in the game was based around finding puzzles everywhere that ranged from Korok seeds under out-of-place rocks to hidden test chamber-esque shrines. Also, the flow of the plot seemed to be explore shit until bored, then kill Ganon. I like to imagine that was actually the strategy here, is Ganon's building all of these puzzles, not so much to stop you, but to try to keep you from getting bored.
Oh, it's a, yeah. Test chambers are the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep you complacent going in there, moving those cubes around.
Yeah. Oh, I missed. He then went on to say, I didn't 100% the game by any stretch of the imagination, but by the time I was done, Link absolutely destroyed the final battles.
Yeah. Those final battles are fun. I like Breath of the Wild quite a bit. I think I played it in a little bit too compact of a timeline. But yeah, I don't know where we are in the hype backlash cycle either. I think that we are...
I need infinite time for that game.
Yeah, that's the thing. Again, a game selling you a lifestyle, you know?
Yeah.
Ben, what does Juan say?
Juan says, Marvel's Spider-Man at the moment. Traversal is just so fun.
Yeah.
I can second that, yeah.
Looks so fun. Just watch videos of it.
I really don't worry. Get it mainly to try to find my apartment.
Oh yeah. I didn't attempt to do that. Well, what happened was I got prototype from Gamefly when I was in New York for that summer, not realizing that they probably wouldn't take you over to Brooklyn and that, and so I couldn't find my place. And also like nothing around Central Park, which was the place where I spent the most time up to that point, looked right, and I was very disappointed. But fortunately, I had the ability to wreck shit up, and I could turn that disappointment into actually playing the game. Prototype is a dumb game, but fun. Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, wish I didn't have to say this, but I do. Skyrim. Fallout New Vegas is a close second.
Why do you wish you didn't have to say this?
As someone who hate played that game, I think I can understand, maybe.
But even now, you hate, like, so you say you hate played it. Would you call it your favorite?
No.
Okay. All right. Oh, man. Let's hear. Roop says, I used to like them. Open world games, that is. Sank about 1,000 plus hours in Fallout 3 and New Vegas both. Now I'm more into games with 8 to 25 hours max gameplay with good story and a constant feel of progress.
I can feel that for sure, especially although like I say that, but then at the same time, I've been playing these long ass JRPGs. I think I'm ready for a break from them. Yeah. That is why.
Yeah, you need some candy is what you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everlasting jawbreakers or whatever you would say a JRPG is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Black licorice.
Oh, so some people like them, but the people who don't like it really hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people hate it and some people are wrong. Totally joking. Please do not send Cole hate mail. I don't actually read any of it, so whatever. Yeah,
no, it's fine. It's fine.
I love how that's the thing that you're just like, sorry about that, but I don't actually mean that. But all those other things that I said that made you mad, yeah. Those are fine. They stay.
All those things I totally meant.
At Cole Ross. Yeah.
As a brief aside, I almost rage quit listening to the episode last week when you said, has James Cameron ever done anything good?
I know. The thing is that, you know what, the episode when I was listening to it, I was like, I had immediately said Terminator, and then it just like blipped me off. And like, you can't hear me say Terminator, so like, oh, you just weird. Hear this silence, and then you hear Cole say whatever, and then I pop in and I'm like, yeah, Terminator, you know. But like, I had said it right away and I was like,
yeah, it's weird. Especially weird on my end. I guess just I strongly dislike pretty much everything he's done recently. Maybe everything he's done since I was old enough to see any of his movies.
Like starting with probably like Titanic.
Which is funny because like before that, he's made a ton of things I really like.
Yeah.
The Terminator series would be very high up there on my like list of movies.
Yeah.
Remember how we were wondering if he did Terminator 3? He did.
Oh well.
Terminator Salvation as well. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Luckily,
he did not do those movies.
Believe that Terminator 3 ever happened.
He only directed the first two.
What? Well, then how come it shows up when I Google James Cameron movies?
He was probably a producer on that.
Okay, that would be okay.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wait a minute. How come it's in his credits here? Okay, thank you for correcting, Ben. I'm sure somebody was mad for about 2 minutes.
They already tweeted. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
To be fair, other than Terminator 2, I will not vouch for any of his movies made during my lifetime.
What about True Lies?
So this is the second time that somebody has said, what about True Lies? Because we also did an episode. There was a Schwarzenegger heavy episode of Exquisite Suffering here recently. Mm-hmm. And we didn't bring up True Lies, and people were, I think that True Lies has to lose a couple of points because of Tom Arnold, and it does not recoup those points because of Tia Carrere, you know?
So
I would put that in reverse, cool. But okay.
I'm curious, what is your stance on Last Action Hero?
I think it's neat. It is not a movie I would watch for fun, but I think it is definitely ambitious. Yeah. You know, it's a good kids movie.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
It's the director of Die Hard and Predator.
Yeah. I was going to say, David, you said that James Cameron hasn't directed anything of worth in your lifetime. You only say that because Aliens was put out 1 year before you were born.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted
because you're a Avatar baby. 2, 3, 4, and 5.
No, I mean, I totally, yeah. No, I, yeah.
Oh man, this is a mess.
Let's progress.
Yeah, let's progress. David, what does Mike say?
Sorry, I need to navigate away from Cameron's entire filmography. Mike says, as much as I want to enjoy open world games, I find myself immediately getting overwhelmed by too many things to do. That said, I adore the open level design of games like Dishonored, Deus Ex, etc. Those games have sections that are large, detailed, and accessible to various gameplay styles, and generally feel more focused than something like, say, a Bethesda game.
I will say that I totally agree with you, Mike, because, like, I mean, I play an open world game, but have I actually ever beaten any open world game? No!
Morrowind?
I haven't, because I will get bored as hell. And there's so much stuff going on, and then I just give up on everything and then just wander off and do my own thing and then get bored of that and then lose all sense of purpose. Whereas, like, in Dishonored, I played that and Dishonored 2 very consistently until I finished them because it was open enough to let me have fun exploring and having fun with that traversal aspect to the point that I would go back and, you know, retrace my steps through the areas I didn't go through and, you know, take my time in the levels, but at the same time still have a narrative focus that, you know, kept me actually, you know, going forward towards the, you know, progressing somewhere in the game. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Totally agree with that.
I'll second Mike as the secret MVP of this answer because Dishonored and Deus Ex, that kind of open hub for individual levels is a wonderful compromise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think another one in that is a little less that, but I feel like still gets the idea is Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh, it's very much in the it's very much in the same kind of vein, right? Yeah,
sure. Let's move on.
Let's do that. let's see, Ben. What does Jack say?
Jack says, I'll take the pictures bait and say Witcher 3. More than endless quests, deep lore. More than the endless quests, deep lore, and numerous NPCs. It was just so fun to explore. And roach across each of the large areas of the game. Probably more fun for me than actually doing anything. That's fair.
Yeah, Jack took my answer. If that wasn't clear from the end of the brief there.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people worked way too many hours and were treated pretty poorly during the production of that game, but it is something special and ridiculously emotionally resonant, which is hard to do, especially with the pacing that is usually as fast and loose and wibbly wobbly as an open world game is. Jala,
especially in games where your main character is a psychopath.
you don't have to play it like all games. Yeah, it's default.
Well, I feel like most games though you're not explicitly so.
Ah, He's just faking
it. You're
not
cognizant that you're a psychopath.
Jala, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, the first open world I played was Oblivion. I wish they would remaster it. I would love reliving that game on updated graphics. The first one's the best one. That's, there it goes again. So.
Yep. Let's see. Jonathan says, I would consider Hollow Knight an open world game done well. It's a game that gives you no indication as to how large the world is. Exploring is incentivized by the brevity of the map system. Continues into a five-page discussion of how this relates to Dark Souls. So I never stopped to consider that maybe Metroidvanias would be considered open world. I would need to roll that over. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, is it too early to say Cyberpunk 2077? Yeah, I guess I shouldn't count my chickens till they hatch. So I'll say The Witcher 3. It's the only open world game where I never once said, what's the point of all this space if it's just going to be empty space? Every inch of the three maps in that game are covered in monsters, treasures, puzzles, fairy tales, and deep character interaction. If more open world games felt like The Witcher 3, maybe I wouldn't hate them so much.
Yeah. I think with The Witcher...
I picked the best image for this because the next couple of them are also The Witchers. And there's two more after that, lower than that, too. I mean, like, wow, it won by a mile.
That is very funny. So I think that what The Witcher 3 nails is that an open world game doesn't necessarily impress with scope. It impresses with density.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be my snappy summation that I'm sure I said at great length when we covered it for WoF. Ben, what does Warren say?
First of the more Witcher comments, The Witcher 3. Almost every portion of the map has something cool to see. The game also gives some of the best side quests in any game I've played. That's true. The hunts are some of my favorite content in the entire game. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. And Jala, get us through this this other Witcher one.
David says, I'm here for the obvious picks of The Witcher 3 and various Fallouts. Even in the lesser Fallout entries, I've still had a blast just yomping around the wasteland, and The Witcher 3 doesn't need any more sugar poured on it. And fuck their development process in terms of their staff turnover and crunch.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yep.
Yeah. Allison, in here with a dark horse and one that I thought of a little bit, Saints Row the Third. I've never had a better gaming moment than racing to save Shandy while I Need a Hero blasts in the background. That game is perfection. The reason I say I thought about that is because, like, when we were talking about kind of the Grand Theft Auto model possibly being a little bit flawed, Saints Row 3 came up as an immediate kind of counterpoint. I loved that game so much. And even though I played Grand Theft Auto 5, not to completion, because that'd be nuts, you know, but until the credits rolled and had some fun with it, nothing quite hit those highs. And I'm just curious if it is just the personality that covers that ground.
I wonder if some of that, or at least an advantage of that, could be the fact that they make absolutely no effort to keep you from just, you know, crossing the entire map in about a minute.
And that's more Saints Row 4, though.
Even though you know, 3, you know, does very little to keep you from, you know, getting a jet fighter or a, you know, Ferrari within, you know, they're very close to the start of the game.
Yeah. Saints Row the Third also does, like, some of the best stuff with music. Like, 4 has some really obvious perks to it, with a couple of key moments. But, like, riding around and singing that Sublime song, or...
Parachuting to Kanye.
Yeah, Parachuting to Kanye, The Power by Kanye. Yeah, like, I need to play that game again. Damn it, Allison! let's see. Let's power through the rest of these. Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I love Bethesda open world, but since it's already well covered, I'm going Sleeping Dogs. Getting the feeling of Hong Kong right. Cool.
That's a game I need to get around to playing. David, that seems like a game that you would have played.
Yeah, yes, I did.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's a really good game, really good martial arts. Gets a lot of the kind of, this feels cheap to say, but reminds me of Yakuza a lot
Yeah, I can
in
see that.
terms of some of the story beats and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a really cool game.
Let's see, Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, the worlds of Horizon Zero and Breath of the Wild were wonderful. I found that it's easy to get sucked into just wandering around. So when I feel the nag of the game dragging on, it's usually because I haven't been mainlining. When that happens, I just rush into the main story to finish it up. Save me from accidentally dropping Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. I wish Dennis was here to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn in this respect, because I
I played
have.
some of it.
Oh, you did.
It's fine.
Cool. Oh, Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, sure, Witcher 3 has better quests, New Vegas has better NPCs, and Horizon Zero Dawn has robot dinosaurs, but no game matches Morrowind for that special something that makes every element of the game world come together to create something wonderful. And it has giant mushrooms with wizards in them. Yes.
Yeah, Morrowind is like specifically an amazing thing because it feels like a handcrafted world,
Yes.
every inch of it, as opposed to even something like Grand Theft Auto 3, which came out before that, I believe, if I'm not incorrect. Grand Theft Auto 3 before that, which still had like a city grid kind of thing. Like there was still like a programmatic element, whereas Morrowind had just a real handmade kind of feel, like a real New York slice. I don't
Don't
know
ever
why I
do
said
that
that.
again.
I
Let's
won't.
move on.
Yeah. It was a gamble. It was a gamble.
Womp, 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 womp.
Nathan says, I want to answer Witcher 3 because it's the correct answer, but I keep coming back to Minecraft, not for what the world holds, but for what it can hold. So many good times with friends in college, whether it's making drinking games in our cobbled together capture the flag arena or heading off to an expedition in search of an area we hadn't loaded into yet, so maybe we could see a jungle for the first time. Without a certain amount of enthusiasm, though, Minecraft's world is a pretty bland one, and I'd rather smack a drowner.
Smack a
What?
Drowner doesn't sound like a
Like,
term beyond The Witcher 3.
yeah, it just kind of sounds like something nefarious. Yeah,
Yeah.
drowners are like waterlogged zombie monster kind of things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What is that picture in the last one
So the
that
last
Dustin
one,
sent?
it looks like, yeah, it's definitely earthbound. It
Oh,
is,
okay.
yeah, it is Ness in his pajamas, like in the dream world kind of thing, I believe, saying, "It's me, I'm you when you were younger. Hey, let's play ball. Do you prefer reading comics or playing games? What? You're busy? I have no idea what this is related to."
I imagine it's like a dialogue choice, so he's going to pick one of those things,
Yeah.
maybe.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't remember that exact moment.
I just see PSI and I'm like, pound force per square inch?
Are we filling tires?
Yeah, like, I mean, I
Oh.
know my tires are a little low,
Well,
but.
yeah, the temperature is dropping. Obviously, you got to stay on top of that. I already said my answer, Witcher 3. If I was trying to be a little bit more creative, I would say Yakuza, which only came up in the margins there. But yeah, I will cede the floor to you, Ben.
I'll throw out Shadow of the Colossus as being a really good open world game that's not considered an open world game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. I like that. David, how about you?
So I feel like there's a lot of ways I can go. I'd like to give shout out to Terraria, Bloodborne, and City of Heroes. However, I think the one I'd have to go with would be Shadow of Chernobyl. Stalker. And I think the big thing with that, other than it just being, a really great game, is the fact that it's the only, maybe the only game I've ever seen, definitely the only open world game I've ever seen, where all of the characters are continuously AI controlled. So, you know, in most games, well, like I said, in every other game I've played, basically when you're not in the general area, the NPCs are pretty much just standing there. Whereas in Shadow of Chernobyl, the NPCs are always actually doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you know, come upon, say, the aftermath of battles that might have happened like an hour ago when you were on the other side of the map. Or, you know, similarly, if you, you know, if you're like going into, say, some, you know, complex, all of the NPCs are actively exploring it. And if they happen to, say, sneak up on you or something like that, it's, you know, not because anything was scripted. It's just because, you know, they were actively, you know, trying to, you know, hunt for, you know, something.
Hmm.
So it's really an interesting experience I've never seen replicated. And so, yeah,
there's a guy who worked on The Witness called Casey Muratori, and he's working on a game called Handmade Hero right now, where he's like recording the video of making the entire game from start to finish. But mm-hmm. it's a similar system where all the enemies are like managed and updated. And he was talking about like the like how you have to kind of prioritize things differently, where you have to update things that are close by so the game functions. But then, like, you know, every minute or something like that, you do an update on everything that's like miles and miles away. It seems mm-hmm. cool.
Cool.
Yeah. That actually is interesting. I'm gonna have to check that out. One of the interesting things I learned found from it, kind of similar to what you're saying with needing to update, you know, things that were close by more often, is that it basically becomes impossible to save scum because, like, I'd have situations where I'd walk into a room and, you know, not check a corner and get shot and instantly killed. And I'd reload and walk back into the same room only to find that the enemy had, like, wandered off somewhere to look at something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's...
Neat. And Jala, round us out.
Sure. So I already mentioned it before, but I would say Morrowind. And although I recognize that going back to play it now would be really, really rough, but I spent so much time playing it in college that my laptop would overheat from being on so long.
Nice.
And I remember I was playing at like 3 o'clock in the morning and stuff like that. I remember one time I pulled an all-nighter just playing Morrowind because I was so absorbed in whatever I was doing that I just didn't even realize what time it was. And I didn't even sleep that night because I was just playing my game. And I've talked about it, you know, before, the different elements I liked so much, but I really loved that I could dive underwater and find like a haunted sunken ship with treasure and stuff and explore all different kinds of monster caves and bandit dwellings and things. And it was big without being as big as Skyrim felt, because Skyrim felt like open and like too open and too redundant. Morrowind was on an island, so it made sense that, you know, it didn't feel quite as large as that. But it also had different biomes that were markedly different, unlike in Skyrim and Oblivion, which I mentioned before. And I also remember, I was attacked by cliff racers during a sandstorm making my way north, and I had to take cover as best I could, but there was like cliffs everywhere, so there's not much cover, and those fuckers were terrible. And then I finally got north, only to find a town full of skooma addicts, complete with like a red light district. And, you know, then I was spelunking into Dwemer ruins and stuff, and I thought those were cool, but then I could only carry out like one thing at a time because everything was so ungodly heavy. I had to craft spells just so I could carry everything out, you know. And then, you know, like, and use alchemy to like make potions to make myself strong enough to carry everything out and then dump it at the entrance so I could come get it later. And, you know, like I would go wander through the mushroom forest, and you know, you're riding out in the hollowed out back of a giant flea. I mean, it wasn't just big. It offered a lot of variety in what you could do and see. And, you know, like you were saying, it's really a handcrafted kind of experience where, like, you don't have a giant flea that you ride in Oblivion or in, you know, Skyrim. And you don't have... Yeah, but, like, I didn't play that, and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Elder Scrolls. So, anyway, so, you know, like, the whole point being, like, it was really a unique feel and really, like, a really fantasy setting for sure, you know, in a different way than fantasy in, like, a more creative way than the well-trodden paths of what the settings were for Oblivion and for Skyrim. And they did have, like, Oblivion had some really great story, like, arcs of different characters that you would come across that were just hilarious and really memorable, and they tried to do that in Skyrim, but I never found any of the you know, crazy people in town. Like, remember what was his name, Glothier? You know, oh my god, Glothier from Oblivion was like one of the funniest quests, like the craziest and funniest quests ever. And, you know, they couldn't replicate that in Skyrim. I never found anything that was nearly so entertaining there as, you know, some of the stuff that they did, you know, in the earlier games. But,
yeah,
you know, like Morrowind still, even though, you know, the writing in Oblivion had some moments of being really, really cool, you know, it still didn't capture my attention the same way. Like, I didn't have that sense of awe wandering around in Oblivion. You know, like, after the, ooh, look at the graphics, they're so shiny. Like, after that, like, then it was just, okay, you know, medieval world, got it, you know.
Did any of the, I really liked, I played Elder Scrolls Online for a bit, and there's a segment where you basically slip into some sort of, like, pocket dimension of some, I don't know, whatever the demons are called. And it was just this weird, almost like what if scenario. Did any of the mainstream games in the series ever explore those sorts of things?
Stuff gets really weird with the Daedra quests, and like there's a whole expansion for Oblivion called the Shivering Isles that takes you into the Daedric Prince of Madness's realm. That is a little bit like that.
That was great. And when they tried to, when I finally saw him in Skyrim, I was sorely disappointed because he was nothing. He was nothing like, you know, what they had done with Oblivion.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think my favorite part of this one was that the, like, Daedric, whatever demon things, took the form of crows. And so they threatened that if you didn't do what you wanted, they would just follow you around for the rest of your life, cawing whenever you tried to sleep.
That's pretty good.
And then also Oblivion had this too. So, I mean, it wasn't just Morrowind. Like, Oblivion had some good writing, so I can't, like, be too down on it. But
when you say this, by Azura is a...
And then in the background, you can see the adoring fan. by Azura, you've got to say it the same way. Come on. You don't even know what the adoring fan is, do you? You need to go Google that. You need to go look on YouTube, and then you'll understand. There's so many people who, like, dedicated hours to finding new and creative ways to murder the adoring fan.
Oh.
Because, like, basically, when you go through the arena and you become, like, the champion of the arena, this dude is outside.
Oh, shit, and he's like, this. Yeah.
And then he's like, can I follow you around? I'm you know, I'm your biggest fan or something. And then he will follow you fucking everywhere. And, you know, like, you can't get rid of him.
So, again, game that I feel like I'm surprised no one commented on was the first half of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too, actually, given how much it comes up elsewhere. I was also surprised nobody tried to make a case for Dark Souls.
Yeah.
I mentioned Bloodborne.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. You said Bloodborne.
And Hollow Knight was brought up, and somebody brought it up in relation to that, which is understandable. But, yeah, I don't know. Thank you, everybody, for chiming in with this. If you want to participate in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jala, for putting this up.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind as my health rapidly fails me. Ben, you monster, you've been away the longest, so I will go to you first.
Yeah, so this is kind of a callback to earlier in the episode. The only thing I've been playing is No Man's Sky, and I've been just continuing playing along with that. It's still pretty interesting. I mean, it's still kind of like Subnautica, so that's why I think I like it. It's just like a lot of kind of crafting and exploring the worlds. Kind of going back to the conversations we were having about open worlds, the worlds are sparse, you know, so like in that sense, it's not like a very fleshed out open world thing, but they're randomly generated, and I think they're fine enough for that. Like, they're surprisingly detailed for that. But usually, like, basically going to worlds is basically an exercise in getting like resources. It's not usually to fill out any sort of storyline type quests. Like a lot of their quests, it's weird because like in describing the game, it's like a lot of things that I don't like about other games. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the quests are like randomly generated the same way that they have them in Skyrim, but for some reason I don't mind them in this game as much as I do Skyrim, because the entire game's randomly generated.
Yeah.
So there's not really another way that they could do it. But anyway, most of what I've been developing is the base that you have. So they have like a pretty good base development system, where you're like have like specialized rooms, and you can recruit people to work in the rooms and stuff like that. So my base is on like a Mars-like planet, and I just started building. You need like, I built a structure like at one point, like a foundation or whatever, and just started building rooms in a single direction for as long as it would go, kind of off of a cliff. And so it's not a base that would hold up in our physics, at least on Earth, but maybe it works there. And it's also just really funny to see it rendered from afar as you're like flying into the planet. But yeah, that system's been cool. Just figuring out like the crafting system is pretty interesting. I'm trying to stay away from stuff online, but there's a few points where it'll be like, you need to find this material. I'm like, I have no idea. I have not seen that material yet. And so I'll like look up how to find it. One, for instance, you can only get through murdering animals that are on the planets, which I had not done up to that point. So I suddenly had to kill a bunch of creatures in order to craft a few different things.
But they weren't they weren't cute creatures, though.
Some of them were, dude. It felt really bad. Some were like little tiny turtles that were a little bit adorable. And it's just, yeah.
Aww.
There's no like moral system in the game, though, so it doesn't judge you for doing this. In fact, it encourages you. So
you just have to live with yourself.
Yeah, you just, it's like season one of Fargo. You just apologize the entire time while you're doing it, and it's really disturbing. So, yeah. But I still enjoy the game. I don't know if I'll play it to, I don't even know what completion means in that game, but, like you can definitely get a sense of it's like, okay, we're just going to introduce this new thing. And there's just like to advance like the tech tree. Like there's not like a sense of progression like there is in Subnautica where it's like, setting up like storyline and paying it off, or like there's like the long-term goal of like getting off the planet in that game. There's not really a long-term goal here. Like the one storyline is just like discover the mysteries of space, and it's like it's kind of like, I don't know, cheesy, I guess.
Pick a direction, nothing is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, there's like some of the quote-unquote like main path or whatever where there's some like story beats or whatever, and it's fine, but it's definitely not as like engaging as some other games, I guess. It's not really what's keeping me there, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it's still fun. Just figure out small things of like how to make glass or how to make these like random things. Like that's kind of cool to fiddle around with. So yeah, I guess the one thing that it's missing right now though, is I don't get a sense of, I don't see anything that I can like level up to make getting stuff easier, I guess, or like, I guess maybe there's one or two techs that I still need to do before I like things will get easier as far as like collecting resources. But yeah. So hopefully that stuff comes up soon so it doesn't feel grindy.
Specifically in comparison with Subnautica has a huge benefit in that because it is a limited and defined, you know, kind of play space. Like, yeah, it is very clear once you have upgraded enough to, like, have a step change in your harvesting efficiency, or, like, to be able to go to a greater depth. Like, they are so able to, like, mete out any kind of sense of progress and pacing, whereas No Man's Sky just necessarily, by definition of what it is, cannot provide that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, Ben, why isn't this game that game?
Yeah.
Sorry. I just realized that's basically what I said.
They definitely made, I do appreciate the improvements that they made to the game.
Yeah.
I think if they took the Subnautica model where they just had an early access game, let people play it and then make feedback based on that, and then had a final release, I think it would have been so much better accepted. And it wouldn't have, like, kind of the black eye that it does. The other thing that's cool too is they have the, like, the fleet type mechanic or whatever, the Starfleet that you can form or whatever. It's basically one-to-one with the mechanic in Black Flag, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, it's like you can just send ships on missions to other parts of the galaxies and it'll, like, print back logs of what happened and give you, like, awards and stuff, but it's, like, time-based, you know? You know, that was a good system in Black Flag and it's a good system here.
Is it time-based in-game or time-based just, like, you wake up in the morning, dial in your missions, and then come back after work and see how things are going?
Yeah, it's time-based. Well, I'm not sure, I guess. I believe it's time-based in real time. So, like, if you quit the game and then come back an hour later, it should be good, I think. And then there's, like, room to add stuff to your fleet, like, but it costs money, so you have to, like, get a bunch of money in order to do that. Like, I'm, like, way far away from doing anything like that. But that's just a good mechanic that they added to the game that did not exist before. And since you can, like, have your fleet, like, warp to any part of where you are, like, that's, even though that's, like, not as quote unquote, like, realistic in terms of what you can do with the game, like, it's very good for gameplay reasons.
Nice.
Likewise, this was a small thing they added. They added, like, portals so that you can kind of jump from system to system. And that was, like, pretty necessary because if you're going to make a home base, like, you're not going to be able to travel far away from it if you're, so that is a good thing that they added as well.
There just needs to be a button that is just like, hey, take me home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then also a button that is take me to where I was when I last pressed the take me home button.
So, yeah.
To be fair, though, what really is home?
That's where you make it. That's where your shit is. Like home is where your shit is.
Home is where your shit is. Okay.
So we've got a title.
Yeah, no, there's cursing in it.
Home is where your crap is.
That's not as funny.
One small downside with the teleportation thing is they just do it by name of the system. So if you're not paying attention to what the name of the system is when you teleport there, there's a lot of trial and error of figuring out which place is which place. So that was, like, kind of one downside. It doesn't really give you, like, information of, like, oh, that's this system. There's these people here. These are the planets you saw there, or whatever. So.
Yeah. What kind of scrub are you if you're sitting down playing a game without a notepad, though?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I have done all the translations myself of all the languages.
Have
in
you?
My Rolodex. No. Yeah. But no, I definitely appreciate the game. It's weird. Like, a lot of the interest is kind of, like, trying to figure out how they did everything, like, programmatically. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about is, like, because you can have multiple bases in it, and, like, the cool thing they do with it is wherever you make your base, it's kind of like a contract with the game. They're like, okay, we'll save the state of everything in a radius of where you put this base, like, computer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you do to this area, we'll keep track of that. If you mine the gold here, we'll keep track of that. That'll never exist again. It's always going to be mined. If you mine all the rocks around your base, it'll be gone. Like, we have a fresh place or whatever. But if you go, like, to the horizon or whatever, that's where we can put whatever we want, you know, so we can make, like, a random mission there if we need to. So it's kind of cool to see stuff like that and, like, how the game works. Or, like, little things of, like, when you're flying down to a planet, the way that they, like, briefly will gray out everything as, like, atmospheric interference or whatever as a way to, like, switch out the textures that they need for, like, the zoom detail of, like, when you're coming into land. So it's, like, stuff like that's, like, really cool. I do think it's, like, really cool that there's a very ambitious game, you know? Like, and they're trying to do something that hadn't really been done before in another game. So,
yeah.
I like that aspect a lot.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you should check it out, Cole.
I should. What else?
That's all I've been playing like Rocket League and stuff like that, but that's not worth mentioning. So yeah.
I'll do mine real quick because I've continued being busy with I don't know, being sick in bed because I mowed a lawn wrong.
Have you been streaming?
Yeah, no, I was gonna open this up. So I recently replayed Resident Evil 7, did the base game with the goal being here in a couple of weekends to do the DLC. Specifically, there are two pieces of DLC that I haven't played yet, and haven't played as of the time of recording. However, why I want to bring it up here is because Ben and Jala, both of you are people who have some experience either with the game or the demo, and both of you had watched a fair chunk of RE7. I don't know that I have an awful lot new to say about it. I think that it is still like a really kind of great game. I was still just so enthusiastic this time specifically about the performances, like, you know, Jack and Lucas and Marguerite, like the cast in that game is so good. So well done, and you can appreciate even the over the top aspect of what they're doing, especially like with later turns that the story takes. So that's the thing that stuck out for me, and I'm excited to spend more time with these characters in the DLC. There's one piece of DLC that I've played, I forget what it's called, but it kind of shows the inciting incident that started the infection. Gives us a lot of the Bakers in their prime before they get taken over. That is real good. But all of that will come up on the stream. I just want to hear both of your thoughts based on what you heard. Or based on what you saw, rather.
Ben?
Okay. The one thing that I liked about it is that, like, similar to Resident Evil 4, like, they were very confident in making like a completely new style of game, or like a completely new like way of doing a Resident Evil game, even if it's like kind of similar in plot to other games in terms of like finding a weird virus and then slowly finding out more about like what it is. So I was just really impressed by that, the fact that they're like committed to like, okay, let's make it a VR game, but it doesn't have to be a VR game. You can just play it as is, and just have it be completely first person and have like kind of a limited set that you kind of double crisscross on and like regroup in, at least as far as like the first half of the game. So I thought, I was very impressed by that. And it is like, it has the same sort of cheese, I think, as some of the other Resident Evil games, like shooting a shotgun at someone and then walking away from them as they also walk towards you and try and stab you with something. Like, trying to visualize that happening like in real life is just like funny, but it's still like really good. And there's a lot of cool moments, like I think the one where it's like you watch the VHS tape. That's like just an awesome like aside sort of thing where it's like very much like a funhouse type thing. It seems cool. I think I'll probably try and play it eventually, but
Jala.
I only watched through the beginning part that I had already played, and then like the fucking end of the game, because I had other stuff going on. So like, I don't really have a whole hell of a lot to say other than that end boss really looks like a Resident Evil ass, like in the style that they've been doing for a while. Kind of whatever the hell. And that's it. I don't really have anything to say about it.
Okay. Yeah, the end boss is really goofy. The pretty much the entire last leg is incredibly akin to RE5 and 6.
It's like like 4 too.
Yeah, four as well.
The island chapter is a weird one.
Yeah, that's true. It's like they tried to speed run the entire series aesthetically.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all that I have. Nothing else too interesting on top of that. I am desperately looking forward to November, when things can calm down. And I can only say that like previously November would have been just a fucking nightmare because I would have been traveling, but no, I'm close to home now and that is good. So I actually have time to relax, which is nice. Jala, I'm curious what you have been playing.
New stuff. I didn't mean to kill you, Cole.
No, I'm dead. You're out from under the yoke of SMT4. So tell us what you've been up to.
So the first thing, I can talk about a co-op corner again, because I actually co-opted a game. Okay, so I played Nine Parchments. So this is a game by Frozen Byte, the makers of Trine, and it came out last year. It's on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, and I'm playing it on my Switch because I play everything on a mobile device right now.
Yeah.
Now that it's getting cooler, I might possibly go sit on my PC, but the problem is I also do my day job from my PC, so you know, I kind of want to get away from it. So anyway, it's an action RPG where you and your comrades are all students of the Astral Academy. And at the beginning of the game, there's an explosion and 9 spell pages are scattered from a tall tower off to different areas of the world. And you have to go find them because you wish to be delinquents, basically. And there are 49 different spells in the game, and you start with 3. When you find one of the parchments, you can choose one of 3 randomly selected spells to add to your spell wheel. So, you know, like you get more spells over time, and then your spell wheel gets ridiculous. There's a single-player mode, but it's not really especially exciting because it's really made for co-op. So anybody who has a Switch on that note and wants to try this game out and you get it, hit me up. I'm Jolichon in places. You can find me and tell me all about your friend code or whatever. I'm playing currently with David P., also known as Thrensa, right now. And so we have room for a couple more folks, or I can play a new game with other people. It does not matter to me.
This looks so much like Magicka.
It does, but it's also a simplified way of using spells. Like, it's not like the complex entry that Magicka has, but there's friendly fire, you know, so, like, you will be having, like, the more people are on the screen, the more mayhem there is. Players can resurrect each other by standing in a circle around the corpse for a certain length of time. When 2 beams cross each other, they ricochet off each other to form a more powerful spell that shoots like down the center. Basically, it forms a Y.
Yeah.
The spellcasting, like I said, is simpler, but it's also got more of a fairy tale kind of feel, like story to it. And the music and everything is kind of more like Trine. It's got the same kind of physics going on in the world, more so than the quote-unquote humorous story of Magicka, which, depending upon your sense of humor, that may not be funny to you at all. But here's a little bit of me kiting around at one point before I found an opening. Basically, the monsters were following me around, so I was just like kiting until I've had the ability to smack them with a spell. Basically, your levels and your unlocks carry over from game to game, but it also means that you need to replay this game several times to get access to all the characters, and then you have to unlock the spells and whatnot on each of them, which is unfortunate. Like, we unlocked a new character when we were playing this last time, because basically you have to have certain items in your inventory that you have picked up from previous levels in order to unlock a special challenge that you have to do in order to earn the character. So once you do that, then you unlock that character. While I understand that they wanted to put things in the game to make you want to replay it, and it is fun to have a lot of stuff to unlock, it also means that when you first start the game, out of a cast of like 8 people you can play, you can have 2. You can pick one of 2 characters to start. So overall, though, it's very fun. I'm enjoying it. And we are probably going to be playing in a couple of days here when I get home from work for a little bit in the evening. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
So that
game was
about
9 parchments, just for people who are
games. Yeah, 9 parchments. Any questions about that game?
No. Okay. I don't necessarily. Yeah.
Sure. So, next thing is Heroes of the Monkey Tavern. Guys, I got my dungeon crawler that I wanted on a portable system.
Boy, howdy. So,
yeah, like I've been playing a lot of that. It's all over. It's all up in my Twitter feed if you want to take a look at all them skeleton bros.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is kind of like Legend of Grimrock Light. It was released by Monkey Stories in 2016. This is their only game. It's on Steam, and it's also on Switch. And I looked it up, and it has 8 floors. I just got to floor 6 last night, so I've got 3 more floors to go, like, because I just got to the floor 6, so I have to do 6, 7, and 8. It's a dungeon crawler-ass dungeon crawler.
Yeah, I see a map screen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real-time fight. There's puzzles, there's traps, there's lots of stuff that can kill you everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you're in for that kind of thing, it's more of that content that you crave. The intro, I will say, is a little bit janky. Totally just the dev himself doing the narration. And the English in general is just a little unnatural. It's not filled with grammatical errors, for example, but the title itself, as an example, is Heroes of the Monkey Tavern, when it's more natural to say the Heroes of Monkey Tavern.
Or just Heroes of Monkey Tavern. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a small but kind of noticeable thing, but luckily there isn't, of course, it's a dungeon crawler. There isn't much by way of story. Although saying that, in playing this game, it made me go back and like think to when I was playing Eye of the Beholder on my Sega CD and all of the terrible voice acting in that game. And they actually have like a narrative going on in that story in that particular game. And like, it's ridiculous. And so it made me really kind of want to go watch a Let's Play. I don't know about playing it, but watch a Let's Play of some of that again.
Yeah.
So anyway, I have to say that though this kind of starts out with a dude asking some adventurers to go into this tower, right? After they've done some other quests and they ran out of money, and then you start out and you have like literally nothing, no clothes, no weapons, which is real jank unless they'd added some kind of a note, which they didn't. But if they had that said they literally had to sell the clothes off their backs, then that would have made sense. But you're also level one. So anyway, that's like really nitpicky. It's a dungeon crawler. And that's it. It's no more, no less.
Well, that's ridiculous because like even just as a title, here is a Monkey Tavern.
Like heroes, you would imagine like these aren't just some level one dudes from town that just happen to, you know, decide to, in their drunken revelries, just say, sure, we'll go in the tower. Sounds like a good idea. Like, you know, they should have something with them, but they didn't. So
does that kind of goofy drunken flavor hold for any of this? Or is it just like, it's just you
like
flavorlessly?
There's the only story is that first little bit that is narrated to you, then you're dropped into the game. And then a couple of things have happened, which is kind of cool. On one floor, when I was fighting the boss of that floor, he's like, you know, don't go to the next floor up. I was protecting you. And then he dies.
Okay.
And you're like, ooh. And then like you go onto the next floor and then like, you know, there's other warnings and stuff going on. Like, don't keep going on with here. And you know, made this door never be opened and stuff like that. So it's got like lots of warning stuff. So I don't know if there's going to be sudden storyline later on or if it's just like there's a big scary thing on the top floor. I don't know. We'll find out when I get there. So,
yeah.
But it was kind of cool. It's kind of cool though, because like on a couple of the floors, there were all these Skelebros, right? Like all these skeletons everywhere. I'm like, oh boy, like the first floor that I get to after that guy's like, don't go any further, I was protecting you, is full of skeletons. And I'm like, I was like cautious and waiting for them to come to life, but they don't come to life until like, you know, this one particular thing happens. And then they come up and they start, you know, you have to go hunt them down and they come after you. So anyway, there's like a lot of tombs and stuff and I'm all paranoid, but I don't know when they're going to become animate because they don't always become animate when you walk in. So that's kind of cool because it has like that anticipation thing going because they know, you know?
Yeah.
So
it sounds incomplete.
I don't know. It doesn't feel incomplete. It just like, I don't know. Like when I get to the end, if it feels incomplete, I'll tell you so. But I mean, like it plays fine. I mean, just like, there's not really a story to go with other than you went into a dungeon because you're an adventurer and that's what you do. And you have no money to party, so you need money. And that's why you went into the dungeon. Yeah. I mean, the end.
So it's fine of a reason as any. Yeah.
It's a rote story because it's a rote kind of game. Like, this is just more of the thing that you know. It's not nothing is new about this game, let's put it that way. But if you like a dungeon crawler, this is a dungeon crawler. This is definitely what you want. So so I've been having fun with it because it is a dungeon crawler. So,
nice. And that's what you were looking for.
Yes, it was. So I finally got it. So and I did have one more. Do I have time to talk about it or should I save it?
I think you have time. That was Heroes of the Monkey Tavern.
Yeah, the Heroes of the Monkey Tavern was that one. This one is one that I was kind of excited to talk about. It is 1979 Revolution Black Friday. It's basically a Telltale game. It's not from Telltale, but it's that style about the Iranian Revolution. And, you know, that being said, if you don't know what a Telltale game is, for some reason, it's an adventure, interactive meet drama kind of thing. It was released by Ink Studios in 2016 for PC and mobile, with 2018 release to PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. I played it on Switch. This is their only game that they've ever made. Now, you control Reza Shirazi, who is a young photojournalist who returns to Iran from Germany during the revolution. And the choices that you are making revolve around how involved you get with the revolution itself, and in many cases are about survival. And of course, those choices are timed, and you are not given much time at all,
right,
just as with a Telltale game.
Yeah.
So you also have the mechanic of taking in-game photographs because you are a photojournalist. So you are turned loose to take photos during different protests and things like that. And as you do, you are given access to a side-by-side comparison to actual photos of the revolution. And then you have a journal that's filled out in your menu with historical information about, you know, like a couple of paragraphs about what really was going on at the time. So you can learn more about it at your leisure.
And then they made it with like historical consultants and eyewitness accounts and things. Yeah,
I was about to say the dev team conducted interviews with historical scholars and about 40 Iranians that were living in Tehran during the revolution. And so they also gathered up historical speeches that you can listen to in Farsi or an English adaptation of it. And it was highly acclaimed when it first was released, although it was criticized by an Iranian journalist who called it pro-Western propaganda. And unfortunately, the game's main dev felt afraid after that to return to Iran. And other members of the dev team adopted aliases for protection as a result of all of this going on. So the game was nominated for about 20 different awards, and it won multiple different awards back when it was first released in 2016. The graphics are not the best. But the sound design and the writing is very awesome. And I didn't know what was going on initially because I didn't know that much about the Iranian Revolution. But I picked it up quickly, and I felt invested in the choices that I was making and in the characters, you know, the things that were going on. And the game starts with your capture during a police raid and then goes between your interrogation by the head of Evin Prison, Asadullah Lajavardi, who is a real political figure who is known historically as, you know, being very severe with his torture methods during his time as warden of that prison. And also it goes between that and then flashbacks to when Reza first returned to Iran and found himself in the middle of the revolution. So you're being asked in the interrogation to rat out the members of the revolution. And if you don't, your brother is tortured in front of you. So Reza's brother, Hossein, is a police officer. So you also find yourself in a family torn apart, kind of civil war style. You know, your dad was a revolutionary once, so he's on your side. But your mom is accustomed to how her life is and doesn't want the change that the revolution would bring. So it's kind of like a 50-50 split in your family. And so at that point in the interrogation, you basically have to choose your brother or your ideals. And that's a pretty deep and meaningful set of choices that you have to make throughout, you know, keeping that in mind. And it has really good pacing and some tense, super tense moments, especially during the interrogation part. And it's got some really tough choices. There are parts where, again, you have to figure out who to save or things like that. And you know, those choices are very difficult to make. And I found myself really wishing that it was longer and I'd had more time with everything. It's a very short game. It's about 4 hours, I want to say. It feels like the way that it ends is abrupt. And I understand why it's abrupt, at least for what happened for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I just kind of feel like that was it. Wait, I want to know more. What happened after that to all of these other characters or to the revolution or whatever, you know, like I wanted more of that information.
Yeah.
But anyway, despite that, I would still recommend this game. It's that, like I said, it's not without issues, but it was definitely a unique experience and it taught me a lot of things that I didn't know. I have a couple of Iranian American friends, but they weren't alive for that. And I think their parents had come to the US before that revolution occurred.
Yeah.
So like they don't have like they know about it, but they know about it in like a history kind of way. Like they know people who were over there or whatnot, but they didn't firsthand experience or have people, you know, that in their immediate family are experiencing.
They probably have extended family who live there and have opinions about what happens.
Probably.
So. That's really interesting. I would be interested to play that just because a telltale approach to an actual factual thing.
Yeah.
You know, even something as fraught as this, like, you know, it's embarrassing how little I know about the Iranian Revolution. And the version that I have is probably some heavily Americanized Reagan jingoistic rah, rah, rah kind of sense of like, that's when everything went to shit. And obviously there might be more nuance to this, even though like if people are taking a stance that this is pro America, like they, like the, is the point of view on this like heavily in favor of like, yeah, they probably should have kept the king in as opposed to switching to.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the whole revolution is about bringing more of a democratic, you know, voice to the people. So that's, you know, you become part of the revolution and that's just part of what happens in the game. And so you are not in a position to where you could choose 100% to side. Like in the end, you could dabble in the revolution and then choose your brother basically over your ideals, but you still would have had a large part of the game where you're steeped in the revolution itself and seeing all this negative stuff about the thing that you're, you know, your brother supports.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, because of that, you know, like it doesn't give you like a true neutral capacity to pick, you know, like it's definitely leaning in favor of the revolution is necessary. And, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. I have no basis to evaluate the claim that it's propaganda. I just, maybe it's just that something as fraught as this will always get that charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was a very interesting game and I was really kind of excited to talk about it because I think it, you know, it is a very unique experience because it is a telltale experience of a real thing that happened. And I mean, like they have some real people that were brought into this, but then they also have fictional characters that they brought into this, you know? And so like they fictionalized it a little bit, but with the true heart behind it being that of all these people who lived it. Lived it in their lives and were interviewed by the devs and, you know, they got all the historical information from actual scholars on all of that information. So. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, not nice. It sounds fucking harrowing.
Yeah. But I mean, like it's nice that it exists, that it's out there, that you can access it. It was on sale when I bought it. I don't remember how much it was, but it's not very expensive. It's a very short game. It's an indie game. So definitely take a look at that. That was a 1979 Revolution Black Friday.
Nice.
$6 on Steam.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, it sounds, I don't know. Seems worth it. Yeah. I don't have any questions. I think you summed that up and piqued my curiosity quite well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. David, round us out.
Sure. So I've just been continuing on with Shadow of War. You know, overall, it's, you know, a lot, you know, similar to what I've said in the past. You know, the gameplay continues to be a lot of fun, and the story continues to be largely irrelevant. I upped the difficulty to, I think it's called like brutal mode, which is basically it's the same as the highest difficulty in the game. However, it also significantly upgrades the rate at which you build your what kind of their equivalent of like the combo meter, so that you can do like executions and stuff like that more often.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I'm really mixed about it because, you know, I did that because I was playing on the Nemesis mode, which is kind of the equivalent of hard mode. And it, you know, was getting too easy. So this kind of gives you the much needed difficulty. But on the other hand, one of the biggest things it does is dramatically increasing the damage you take. And that, I feel like, you know, with a game where the controls fairly often, make it so that you get hit even when you shouldn't have, it's really problematic that you can now take about 2 hits.
Hmm.
So, I've had a lot of situations where, for example, 2 enemies attack me at this exact same time, and so I get killed immediately. Or situations where basically when you lose all your health, you go into a quick time event, and when you and you can do like one of those in a battle. And I've had instances where basically I did that, and then the enemy immediately attacked me again and killed me. So, you know, that's sort of mixed. I've been playing a lot more games on higher difficulties recently, and it's actually been an interesting experience because I've really concluded that games need to think a lot more about how they implement higher difficulties. And really need to do more a la carte difficulty settings the way like XCOM 2 does, for example.
Can you give an example of how they do that, for example?
In XCOM 2?
Yeah. Just like,
yeah, well, so like, for example, in that my understanding is you can manually change up the length of the campaign, and you can individually set that either with or without changes to, for example, how they calculate the damage, things like that.
Okay.
Or another example would be like would be Darkest Dungeon, where you can turn a lot of the difficulty mechanics, such as corpses blocking the enemy's formation getting disrupted. That's something you can turn on and off.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So other than that, it continues being like, the more I play, the more frustrating it is that The more frustrating it is that, like, the orcs are designed to be expendable, even though they're by far the most likable characters in the game. I've had just some great incidental dialogue I've heard. I was sneaking to some place, and there were 2 orcs having a conversation about how, oh, we're always talking about how, who's the greatest fighter, but what about other things? What if someone wants to be the, the greatest swordsmith or the greatest pie maker?
you need to nip those dreams in the bud. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
And also, back on the menu.
it's really entertaining just how just gratuitously happy all of the orcs are, like, actually in your base.
Mm-hmm.
Just singing songs and stuff. And so a lot of the dialogue for that is very funny. I found one guy who, I overheard, he's like, I really like, the the new guy and all, but I've got to say, I sort of miss that corpse we used to hang up in the corner over there.
So what you're saying is these dipshits are too lovely to die.
Right, exactly. Also, something that I need to check, I think I caught it quick enough with the PlayStation's, like, record a gameplay snippet feature. But there's a certain faction of the enemy, a certain, like, type of orc that tends to, rather than actually having, like, voice line, they're kind of the feral orcs, so they just kind of screech or growl or things like that. And I was going up against a enemy that was had a special weakness that basically a execution would kill them in a single hit, but unbeknownst to me had a special ability that allowed...
Do other people not have that ability?
Yeah, so normally an execution against a boss will just take, say, like a quarter to a third of their health off.
Okay.
But yeah, this will one-shot them. However, unbeknownst to me, certain enemies have the ability to just, instead of you killing them, they can just kind of trick you and run off. So this... enemy just, I basically run in and like do this execution on him. I guess I should also say when you first attack an enemy, it'll pause, everything will freeze around you, and they'll kind of have this dialogue with you. And so I basically run in, do this execution. It proceeds to scream in my face like a monkey and then do a backflip over my back and run off.
Yay!
It's just one of those things where it's like, huh, well, I guess that just happened.
Huh.
Yep.
So yeah, it's one of those things. It's also, I'd never realized just how much they had really filled out the Nemesis system until I read, someone wrote a guide on Reddit that was just this comprehensive guide to when you kill an enemy, they have a chance of, coming back and, generally coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize there's a entire system for how they will look when they come back from the dead in terms of, the specifics of how you killed them, with like obvious ones being like, for example, if you used fire, they'll generally have like burns on their body, stuff like that. But then there's very specific things for like, whether you cut off someone's arm, or whether you at one point killed someone with fire and then later kill someone by, say, decapitating them, or just random stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of these, in addition to you ending up with these weird Frankenstein orcs, will affect their personality. So I, for example, have one that basically died from me failing to rescue it from an enemy orc that took it captive, that is basically on a vendetta to avenge like all of the orcs I have wronged in my in my campaign.
So that sounds neat. I will not be impressed until they get to the level where you can shoot an arrow at a coconut tree, a coconut falls, and it hits the orc, and it is randomized whether or not it gives him amnesia or cures his amnesia. Just a coin flip.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've seen any amnesia orcs. I've seen orcs that speak entirely in rhyme. I've seen there's a variant of the hype man orc who just gets halfway through a speech is just, oh, fuck it, kill him. all sorts of things. There's if you want to be particularly sadistic, there is entire custom dialogue for if you turn an orc to your side and then command him to kill his blood brother. So just all sorts of random shenanigans happen.
Yeah. I'm way into small details in games.
Yep. It's just too bad. This is desperately a game that needs to like branch out and figure out a way to, I think, make their own setting that completely supports this idea instead of, increasingly tenuous shoehorning it into the Middle Earth setting.
Yeah. I have no idea what this team is doing right now. I don't believe they've announced anything.
Yeah. Hard to say. I'm a little disappointed no one stole the Nemesis system.
They might actually, there might be a legal reason for that, possibly.
That's true.
Oh, can I mention a side note? I mentioned this on the Slack channel or whatever, but they announced that Rocksteady's doing a Harry Potter game for their next game.
What?
They leaked footage of this and I posted it in Duckfeed last week.
Huh.
But
have there been any good Harry Potter games?
There's about to be one.
Oh. Anything else, David?
What is Rocksteady? What have they done?
Arkham.
All the Arkham games.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've gotta say, if I could Batman meme me some Gobby or whatever, that would definitely make my game of the year.
It's just a punch Ron Weasley in the face simulator and put him in the hospital.
Yeah. Freaking house elves. That's all I want from this game.
Anything else, David?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. How about this? How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Okay. So the good news is that my sinus medicine has kicked in and I will be able to sleep well tonight because I can actually breathe. The other good news is if you're in the Pacific Northwest, you can come out and see me and Gary and a few other people at the Portland Retro Games Expo. One weekend only. I'll be there. Please approach us. Say hi. I promise to be pleasant. Sorry, it's hard to be pleasant. It'll be fun. It'll be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. Otherwise, though, the usual stuff you can do for this show, ratings, reviews, Patreon, telling your friends. I see no need to prolong this, especially because it's been a bit of a longer episode with all four of us back in the saddle. Am I forgetting anything important?
No.
Okay. I am Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
My name is David Meismith in New York.
I'm Jala Chan in places.
Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
Cool. And stick around for some titles. All right. Who has some candidates? Ben.
I only have... Okay.
Oh, Jala. You chimed in.
I only have a couple.
Okay.
One is roach used as a verb in parentheses because that's how it was written in the response to the multiplayer about roaching into a direction.
I like that quite a bit.
I feel like roaching would also be a good one.
But although he didn't say roaching, he said roach used as a verb.
Mm. Okay.
I like the addition of a parenthetical.
Yeah. The other one is nip those dreams in the bud.
Also good.
All right. David?
So I had Ben, you monster. And a late entry for I'm sorry, being pleasant is hard.
All right, Ben.
I just have home is where your shit is.
Okay. I'll lump that in with home is where your crap is. And then also I have too lovely to die, talking about those orcs.
Is that two votes for that, or
home is where your crap is, or too lovely to die? Which one?
Too lovely to die. Oh no, we had nip those dreams in the bud.
I like nip those dreams in the bud quite a bit.
I actually kind of do too.
Any objections? Mm-mm. Okay, there we go. That it is. Cool. Well, I'm gonna go. I have lots more to do tonight. No episode next week.
Okay.
All right.
I threw a link for the Harry Potter leaked footage or whatever in the Slack.
Yeah, I'll take a look. That is exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Good night, everybody.
Have fun in Portland.
Yep.
All right. See you guys.
Night.
Bye. Oh, wait. Oh, and Jala's. Yeah. Okay. Later, everybody. Bye.
All right.